The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back, September 11th, 2020. It seems we're doing the right thing by remembering 9/11 a little better this year. I've noticed more tributes and mentions and memories than in recent years past. Perhaps it's due to an unarticulated but clearly culturally absorbed need for unity in a fractured time. Fractured times are not good for America or anywhere else. At best, they lead to divisions. At worst, they lead to enmity or even civil war. It's not should not be our intention to want a civil war, but neither should we not be ignoring one. Yesterday, I alluded to the unity we all or most of us had 19 years ago. I did not identify why it broke. I'll do that perhaps in the next segment, but as I usually recount on this day and have been for 18 years, I was in Washington, D.C. on 9/11/2001. My office was right across from the White House. I remember that day well. I had just come out of a Tuesday Bible study we had every week, and I turned on the Today Show, and a bunch of us sat transfixed at my television in my office, watching that second plane strike the World Trade Center as the reporters were trying to figure out how the first fire started. In short order, the Secret Service came to our building and evacuated us fast. Professor Wilford McClay got it right when he compared where we are today in the war on terror to an old sign he has in his office. That sign says, "Remember Pearl Harbor." And with Pearl Harbor, we all knew what to remember. Some of us still do. We knew what to remember then, and we did. A few years ago, that stopped. And to remember 9/11 became both a controversial and a confused thing. A few years ago, we stopped asking if we defeated the terrorist threat and started to ask if we overreacted. We began to ask if we were Islamophobic. Today we remember the tragedy, but we forget the horror. We rightfully honor the memory of the dead, but we ignore and suppress the evil that led to their deaths. The survivors of the Holocaust got it right. They understood the power of memory just as quickly as Eisenhower did when he arrived at the Ohrdorf death camp. He said the picture of evil needed to be preserved. Holocaust museums get it mostly right when they intone the phrase never again. And indeed, today there are Holocaust studies programs at our universities. I know of no radical Islam programs. And frankly, I'd be afraid of them, given how the professorial class treats the notion of evil and the threat of radical Islam itself. In our elementary and secondary schools, most of the textbooks and a lot, not all, but a lot of the teachers actually buy into and accept much of the Islamist complaint of America and the West. You know that complaint. It states, as the cultural critic Bruce Bauer put it, "Knowing little about America and its history, American students are easily persuaded by multicultural-minded professors that their country is not a light unto the nations, but a blight on the planet, and that other cultures, if not downright admirable, can be excused for their failings because those failings are, for some reason or other, ultimately our fault." I found it interesting that, according to one study, fewer than half the states explicitly identify the 9/11 attacks in their high school standards for social studies. Quote, "It is extremely complicated to explain what happened," close quote, said one education expert. The problem, of course, begins with how we teach civics and American history. You can't put the genie back in the bottle once you have smashed the genie. How have we smashed that genie? How have we smashed the bottle the genie was in? We have downgraded our exceptionalism. We have taught that all cultures are deemed equal only when we don't teach that America is the problem in the world. We have taught that all religions are deemed equal, except when we find it acceptable to blame the Western culture or the Christian religion. But you will find it impossible to find an academic critical eye fixed on which societies elevate and esteem individual rights and which do not. So where are we going? Nobody knows. Of course, it starts with our own homeland security and moves outward from there into our foreign policy. We had a Secretary of Homeland Security not too long ago, a former governor of Arizona, who said she prefers the phrase man-caused disasters to terrorism. The Department of Defense and the Department of State were instructed by the last White House to replace the phrase war on terror with the phrase overseas contingencies operations. And that earlier referenced Secretary of Homeland Security said that the prevention of the airliner bombing over Detroit was a case where the system worked. Well, yes, the system did work, if the system was a lone Dutch passenger who tackled the terrorist at the last minute. And then there was Fort Hood. Then Chief of Staff of the Army George Casey said what was perhaps the worst thing that could be said about the terrorist attack at Fort Hood. He said, quote, "Our diversity, not only in our Army, but in our country, is a strength. And as horrific as this tragedy was, if our diversity becomes a casualty, I think that's worse," close quote. Chief of Staff of the Army. Losing political correctness in the military, to him, would be worse than the death of 14 soldiers at an Army fort in Texas. Then we added insult to injury with the Pentagon report on Fort Hood. The report mentioned radical Islam not once. It mentioned causes of violence such as low self-esteem, depression, disgruntled employee syndrome, white supremacy, and right-wing policies. Its recommended solution? More health care providers. Lost on the Pentagon was that Major Nidal Hassan was a doctor. He was a health care provider. Lost on almost everyone in positions of responsibility was that none of what was mentioned as the cause was the cause. I recite this history and more in a moment because this is precisely how slowly but surely a culture and mindset gets corrupted. This is how a national mind gets shaped and how foolish thoughts can be elevated as sophisticated. During all that, our then commander-in-chief continued to negotiate with Iran and shovel billions of dollars to them. And when the dissidents there had an opportunity to overthrow their malocracy, our commander-in-chief said, "We will not meddle." He would meddle with the government of Iran by giving them billions of dollars. He would not help the dissidents in Iran. So meddle we did not, and the dissidents were crushed, and Iran becomes ever closer to a nuclear weapon. We did, however, meddle in some places. We meddled in Egypt in telling an ally, a longtime ally, Hosni Mubarak, that he had to go when dissidents rose up in his country. And go he went, and in came the Muslim Brotherhood. Among its first acts was to establish an alliance with Iran. Showing how little the last administration understood the Middle East, our then Secretary of State and future Democratic presidential candidate testified that Bashar Assad of Syria was a reformer. Today, Syria is a slaughterhouse again. So have we won? No, we simply have not. Iran may be as powerful as ever. Palestinians continually attempt to become a full state recognized by the UN with zero democratic norms, not even elections. The previous president of the United States even publicly lectured Israel on the size of what its borders should be, telling our allies they should be constricted to an indefensible 9-mile width. Meanwhile, the A-team of terrorism, Hezbollah, is financially and violently active not just in the Middle East, but in Latin America, as it was not before. Let me finish by saying this. How we talk, think, and teach here, and what goes on here matters. I take my cues from Lincoln. Only we can destroy ourselves. If destruction be our lot, we must ourselves be its author and finisher. As a nation of free men, we must live through all time or die by suicide. There were heroes on 9/11. Let us never forget them, men like Rick Rascorla. He should be a household name. Bill Bennett and I dedicated our book on terrorism, The Fight of Our Lives, to him. Learning names like his is the other way we stay a nation of free men. First, unlike the record above, we understand our enemy, we take our enemy seriously, and we call it by its proper name. Second, we forever esteem those who did just that and made this country better because they saw things for what they really were and saw their duty to save American lives. So who was Rick Rascorla? He moved into the United States from Great Britain. He came here in the 1960s to actually help us fight in Vietnam. And he fought in the famous Battle of Ya Drang. His picture is on the cover of the book, We Were Soldiers Once and Young. He came back from Vietnam and in time became head of security for Morgan Stanley. After the first attack on the World Trade Center in 1993, he knew the terrorists would come again. So what did he do? Here's how the journalist Amanda Ripley describes it. From then on, since 1993, Rascorla started running the entire company through frequent surprise fire drills. He trained employees to meet in the hallway between the stairwells and, at his direction, go down the stairs two by two to the 44th floor. He noticed they moved slowly, so he started timing them with a stopwatch, and they got faster. The radicalism of Rascorla's drills could not be overstated. Remember, Morgan Stanley was an investment bank. Millionaire, high-performance bankers on the 73rd floor chafed at Rascorla's evacuation regimens. They did not appreciate interrupting high-net-worth client calls in the middle of a meeting. Each drill, which pulled the firm's brokers off their phones and away from their computers, cost the company money. But Rascorla did it anyway. He didn't care whether he was popular. When guests visited Morgan Stanley for training, Rascorla made sure they all knew how to get out, too. Even though the chances were slim, Rascorla wanted them ready for any kind of evacuation necessary. Then came 9/11. Rascorla grabbed his bullhorn, his walkie-talkie, and a cell phone and began systematically ordering Morgan Stanley employees to get out. They already knew what to do. Even the 250 visitors who were taking a stockbroker training class and had already been shown the nearest stairway, they knew what to do, too, thanks to Rick. Rascorla had led soldiers through the Viet Cong-controlled central highlands of Vietnam. He knew the brain responded poorly to extreme fear. Back then, he had calmed his men by singing Cornish songs from his youth. Now, in the crowded stairwell, as sweat leached through his suit jacket, Rascorla began to sing into the bullhorn. Men of Cornwall, stand ye steady. It cannot be ever said ye, for the battle were not ready. Stand and never yield. He saved thousands of lives that day, thousands, but not his own. His last recorded words were, quote, as soon as I make sure everyone else gets out, close quote. He said those words in response to Morgan Stanley regional manager John Olson, who was yelling at him, Rick, you've got to get out too. Who was Rick Rascorla? He was an American by choice. He was a hero. Of him, as of so many, it may be said of them, as Steven Spender wrote, the names of those who in their lives fought for life, who wore at their heart the fire center. Born of the sun, they traveled a short while toward the sun and left the vivid air signed with their honor. We owe it to our heroes, to our ancestors, and to our progeny to know names like that. And we owe it to ourselves to make more Rick Rascorlas, both homegrown ones, citizens born here, see in us what so many like Rick born abroad see in us. And we owe it to civilization's adherence to oppose civilization's abuse. Yes, we have an enemy, and yes, it is real, and we can never forget it. Nor can we or should we ever forget what our enemy has done to us and what it plans for us still. Sometimes our enemies have been Marxists, sometimes fascists, sometimes Islamofascists. Sometimes they are born abroad. Sometimes they are born here. Sometimes they move here. But the degree to which we appease or even honor them and their ideologies will be the degree to which we save or lose this, the last best hope of earth. The beginning of our wisdom here will be the beginning of our relearning and remembering who we are and who they are. The beginning of our wisdom starts with understanding that if destruction be our lot, we must ourselves be its author and finisher. For as a nation of free men, we must live through all time or die by suicide. I'm Seth Leibson. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. A little Ronnie McDowell there for you. Love to open it for you all up. September 11th, thoughts, memories. or anything else, Open Line Friday, but I did want to put an emphasis on that if I could. 602-508-0960. I have a lot more to share with you, and we'll have some good guests. Let's go to Dave in Surprise first, right off the bat. Hi, Dave.
Thank you so much for taking the call today, teacher.
Thank you. You're always so kind by saying that. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, it's an open forum, and I gain as much from you and the other callers as I do by expressing the words myself. I love being outside of my own thought bubble.
Oh, great. Me too. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So I'd like to quote, if I can, I think it's prescient in these times, and it's from Thomas Jefferson.
Okay.
That the tree of liberty will be nourished by the blood of tyrants and patriots from time to time.
Right.
It's not an exact quote. I could look it up if I had.
Yeah. No. He wrote. Yeah. No. I know. We all should know the quote. The tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Thank you so much
yeah.
for the correction.
Yeah.
I appreciate
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
I've said this for months. I said this when this happened in Minneapolis, and I think the DNC is corrupt, and unfortunately the GOP is complicit. And it looks like the DOJ, for the most part, is AWOL. At some point, I think patriots will need to stand up, and we'll need to correct this action and remove the communists or Marxists. I think they're more Marxist than anything. And if we can't force immigration on them, I don't know what else will satisfy this. And I don't think November 4th is going to be an answer. I think it's going to be much more of the same. I think that stuff that happens in Rochester, New York, will expand. It not only expanded to Pittsburgh, I can see it coming to Phoenix. I can see it coming to my little town in Surprise. I don't think it'll be far-fetched for it to be everywhere, for them to burn schools and churches. I mean, the 1% or 10% or whatever it is are so unhappy they will burn everything down instead of trying to fix it through a democratic process.
Well, you know, I'll tell you something. We've had a lot of conversations here, not just here, but abroad, about whether we're facing a cultural civil war, perhaps even a revolution, as I am more likely to look at it when you look at the stakes and the upending of 1776 and all it stood for. One of the, I think, important things to keep in mind about 1776 and this country, and Jefferson, of course, who was at the, as I remind, was writing from France at the time, is that we have to be cautious, obviously, that we don't do things as the Declaration of Independence says for light and transient causes. How does he put it? Prudence will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And so I don't like to think in terms of violence. I like to think in terms of the way Lincoln thought of it, which was in his House Divided speech, where he said one way or the other is going to come and win, one way or the other. And he proposed we do it one way, through ballots, not bullets. That's where I would rather us be. Obviously, we all have to take on our own certain self-defenses, right, Dave? And even when we do that, we are attacked by leftist governments. I give you St. Louis. But I don't like the notion just up to an election of us having to think that way. I would much rather us resort to ballots than bullets. I don't know if you see the election. I'll ask you this question. I don't know if you see the election the way I see it. Pause on this and come back to me on with your answer on the other side of this break. But do you see Donald Trump winning in 2020? And like me, do you see him winning in larger measure than he did in 2016? You may not. You may not. But let me know what you think of that on the other side of this of this break. And, of course, want to invite others as well. 602-508-0960. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, 602-508-0960. This election in November is, I think, the most consequential since 1860. We'll talk with Dave a little bit more about that in a moment. Stakes are high, the battle lines stark. And that's why, among other things, I'm excited to talk to you about Dinesh D'Souza's latest film. It's called Trump Card, and it's an expose of the socialism, corruption, gangsterism that defines the Democratic Party. Whether it's the creeping socialism of Joe Biden or the overt socialism of Bernie Sanders, this film reveals what's unique about modern socialism, who's behind it, and why it's evil, and how we can work with President Trump to stop it. Go to watchtrumpcard.com and pre-order your video on demand and DVD. You don't want to miss this important new film by Dinesh D'Souza. Watchtrumpcard.com. Dave, I asked you a question right before the break. I'm curious to know what you think. Do you think Trump wins this election?
Well, I don't want to broadcast this because I don't want people to go overconfident. I think he will win it. I think the only way that the Democrats and one of the unfortunate things I think about country club Republicans is we never listen to the Democrats when they tell us what they're going to do. But I think President Trump definitely wins it with regular ballots, with absentee ballots, the night of the vote. But I'm working for the campaign, and I treat it like we're down by 30 states.
Yes, I think that's right to think of it that way. But if we are in our, shall we say, private or otherwise thoughts, thinking that Donald Trump will win, then I think we have to have the confidence of our fellow Americans. I really do think there's a very silent Trump vote here. It's been silenced. It's been cowed. It's been shamed to stand up and say that it supports Donald Trump. It might be as high as 20% of those polled, according to one piece of research I've seen from Investors Business Daily. We think it's at least 11%. It might be as high as 20%. And we know that over 70% of Republicans are afraid or in fear of expressing their true political thoughts. So I think it could be really rather large, his victory. If so, what great confidence in the American people. But, you know, I was thinking about this too, Dave, and I'll share it with you as well as the rest of the audience, because it's interesting. We come out of a day like today, 9/11, and it's easy to think that we have vanquished our foe of Islam, of radical Islam. You know, Donald Trump does like and has some bragging rights on this and destroying ISIS abroad as far as it's being able to run a country, a caliphate. And he's right. He gets bragging rights on that. But ISIS isn't gone, and Al-Qaeda hasn't gone away, and Hezbollah is probably as strong as ever, and in fact in our region. And I was thinking about after World War II, when we were in a very celebratory mode, you know, 1945, late 40s, early 50s. Much of this country, much of this country had to roll up its sleeves and warn about another threat, communism, right? And not just abroad, but here at home. And we have with us the Winston Churchill speech as early as 1946. I don't know if people realize that his Iron Curtain speech was, you know, 1 year after the war ended, warning us again and again about communism. And the American right here did it. The American left here appeased it when it wasn't being endowed by it. So, you know, we have to be ever vigilant and never be able to go to sleep to, I don't know, about providing, you know, the strength of the tree of liberty through revolution, but certainly providing the manure for it, as Thomas Jefferson put it in that same letter. We have to be constantly vigilant here. And when Churchill was warning about communism in 1946, just after we were licking our wounds having fought and won over fascism, too many people were willing to dismiss that, and we went through a long twilight struggle. We have it again. We have it again here now, and I don't want us to forget the lessons of Churchill any more than we forget the lessons of he who he vanquished first, Hitler, and then who he warned us to watch out for afterwards
which was the web and reach of Stalin, which wasn't just in Europe, but here in America. People made fun of us for warning. People made fun of Churchill for warning. Truman did not want Churchill to give that speech. But there's a lesson here. Again and again, Churchill was right. Again and again. And that's something I think we need to be very, very much in mind of and never forget. The enemies here never go away. Right now, they're on the streets of our major cities and getting the support of a lot of mayors. That's why we do and say what we do and say. I love this song. I love the song because there's a member of our audience who has called in who this was written about very specifically. She was that smart woman in a real short skirt. I also love Squad Pod. Squad Pod is a great company. I was actually on the phone with them today. If you are looking for video and social media conferencing needs, you can obviously use the other guys and be subject to tracking and selling of customer profiles and third parties and some of your information or all of it being sold or used for machine learning, or you can go to SquadPod, squadpod.com/Seth, where you also get a chunk full more of great features. Collaborate with all your teams, screen share, chat, share files, video conference privately, and with a company that respects your right to free speech. Check them out at squadpod.com for all your video and social media conferencing needs. All right, where am I going to next? Joe in Tempe. Hi, Joe.
Hey, Seth. Great show. Great as usual. Well,
thank you
for taking my call.
Thank you.
I've got a local national question, but I want to settle up before I get to it. Back in 2016, 2018, we did not have resources within the Republican Party to do the canvassing as what we have this year. Matter of fact, in 2016, we only tapped into about 1.4 million people out of the statewide of 7.4 million people. This year, we've already contacted about 4 million people,
wow,
either by phone or,
wow,
door to door.
Wow.
We're doing extensive work on it.
Wow.
My question is that when I am out in the field, I do not see Democrats recruiting is minimal. I see a few of their ads, DCCs, and I don't see the activity within the Democratic Party. I wonder why. I've got my own reason.
They're all busy protesting on the street corners. They're all busy at 6 p.m. protesting on the street corners or marching for BLM. I don't know, Joe. That's an interesting thing. They're waging a hell of an air campaign. That is to say TV and radio ads. I don't know if their ground campaign is as good as ours. That's an interesting question. What was your theory?
Well, my theory is that they are banking on the fact that the mail-in ballots, they're going to be able to harvest or they're going to be able to cheat. That's the only rationale that I can use, because I would not see, as belligerent as the other side is, why they would regress. They're not out there. I don't see them on the streets like I am. I just don't see it happening. But yet, it's just quiet. It's dead. Through the heat, understandably, us on the right are out there marching day to day, and I've actually seen some of my other cohorts out there.
I do see that too, and I hear it here, and you'll occasionally hear from time to time people announcing get-togethers or rallies. I see a lot of activity on our side, which I'll tell you why it buoys me, Joe. Not just that we have activity, but if this activity, which is, as you point out, more remarkable than it was 2 and 4 years ago, if this activity is what's going on while we feel repressed and suppressed, think how much stronger it otherwise would be. You were about to say something.
Well, definitely. It's three times as much activity as it was in 2016 and 2018.
Yeah.
The challenge that we had in 2018 is there was 100,000 votes of the Republicans that weren't counted by Fontes.
Right.
And so that caused the diminish, and that's why Sinema got in. So I just don't understand why I'm not seeing more of the Democrats. The only thing I can think of is that they're going to try to cheat with the harvesting and changing the
policy. I worry about it. I worry about it. You know, I have related to y'all that I've had conversations with people far more intelligent and sophisticated than I am. At a particular dinner, I can remember, went around the room and said, "We will win unless there's fraud."
Yeah.
Everyone in the room said that. And I worry tremendously about that. One of the great reasons we got to get Fontes out of there and put Stephen Richer in there. He is a candidate I am all in for. This is a great man running for that job. And, you know, he's such a great citizen, too. I don't know. You sound very involved in the party. And
I've met him.
Yeah. You've probably also gotten a lot of emails worried about this kind of stuff, as I do, merely because I host a radio show. And I refer those questions to Stephen Richer, because on his website, he has his contact information. You don't always get that with a candidate. And he answers them, and he's the expert. And I just, you know, it's great to have citizen expert activists like that, and great to have people like that running for office. Yeah.
15-second story, if you don't mind.
I don't.
The reason I'm promoting Richer, I do hand out his flyers along with Miss Sally and Trump. I looked at iVote. Then one time I was looking at Breitbart.com. He said 400,000 votes were not counted in 2018 during that election. I thought, well, Breitbart's a national, no big deal. I voted, everything. Then it comes, you read down the article, it says 100,000 Republicans were thrown out of the voting ballot by Fontes. So I'm kind of getting squeamish. I looked up i.vote, go in there, punch in your name, punch in your ID, shows me voting in 2008, 10, 12, 14, 16, but nothing in 18.
No kidding.
Absolutely. That's exactly why I'm for Richer. I mean,
well, I can give you a story. I'll give you a story. My best friend from growing up, we lived basically across the street from each other. He's even been on this show a few times. Moved out of state after high school, like I did. So, 86, and never moved back. They mailed him a ballot here to the address he was born in Phoenix, as a voter here.
Wow.
He has not ever voted here. This is what we're facing.
The only problem with it is it's retroactive. There's nothing you can do until it's happened, and then you can't go back and fix it.
Awfully hard to undo an election someone takes office on under the guise of fraud, under the fact of fraud. Yeah.
Exactly.
No, vigilance.
Okay.
By the way, I know our legal team here. I know a lot of our Republican legal team here. It's a great team. I'm worried about what you say, but I'm also confident in our ability to combat it. But the most important thing to solve it, you know, permanently, or at least for another 4 years, is to put Stephen Richer in that office, Joe. Gosh, I love activists like you. I love knowledgeable citizen activists like you. It's the only way we win, people like you. I'll tell you, the second you sound more active than someone else I was going to tell you about. I know a man named George who's an immigrant to this country from the Middle East, and he became a citizen this year, and he's a retiree, and he became a citizen this year. He was so proud of it, so proud of it. Do you know what he does with his every waking minute as a retiree? He works and volunteers for the Republican Party up in Fountain Hills. I mean, he is knocking on doors. He is answering questions. He is manning phones. He is registering folks. Just another great American who sees us better than we see ourselves. I want to expand a little bit further in the show, and I think we'll do it with Pete Peterson some in the third hour. This thought I had this morning, I woke up with, about Winston Churchill and his warnings in 1946. You know, had we gone through anything in our history since the Civil War as exhausting as World War II? And yet the year after Churchill is saying, roll up your sleeves and pull up your socks, there's another one coming. Some paid attention, some didn't. Those who paid attention and listened were reviled by the high culture. The William Buckleys, the National Reviews, the Barry Goldwaters, the New Right. But the price for being right is appearing to be wrong at the time. Kristen's in Queen Creek. Hello, Kristen.
Hello, Seth. I've been in and out of my car all day, so I don't know if someone has already announced a pop-up Trump rally today in Queen Creek.
No, but you can be the first.
Okay. Organized again by young Millie. She's 23 years old.
You got to get Millie to call me. I want to hear from Millie.
I've told her several times. Anyway, it's in Queen Creek at the corner of Victoria and Ellsworth Loop at 5:30 this evening. We have had wonderful turnouts. It's just fantastic.
Give me the address again so I can write it down, because what will happen is people will call or email me saying, where was it again? Go ahead, Kristen. Go ahead. Where is it again?
Victoria.
Yep.
And Ellsworth Loop. It's very near Target.
Ellsworth Loop. That's easy for me to remember. He was a principal in my elementary school, at Mr. Ellsworth. Maybe the same, maybe not. Ellsworth Loop.
May I also add one other thing? And I'm going to call Dennis Prager. I'm going to call Cecily. I've called you. I'm going to call Seb Gorka and tell everyone. I started out by telling one of my neighbors he had courage to put out his Trump sign. The next day, his neighbor put it out. Now the person across the street. Today I was on a street where 10 neighbors put their flags out. If you have the courage to put it out, guess what happens? Other people follow suit and they feel that they're not alone. And this should help those who are on the fence know that they're not going to be called an idiot.
I'm all about that. Kristen, I am all about that. That's exactly right. That's like when Kanye West said we can vote for Trump. It opened up, or when Candace Owens does, it opens up an entire new line of people. I am so for it. The mode by which the inevitable comes to pass is effort, said Oliver Wendell Holmes. Show your effort. Show your courage. Kristen, thank you. Queen Creek, tonight, 5:30, corner of Victoria and Ellsworth Loop. 602-508-0960. I would say so far this show is off to a great start, not because of me, but because of you. So keep it going. Be right back.